Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
And you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 1850 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Right at the start of the show, we were talking to Elizabeth Horan. She's one of the moderators of a Facebook page called Irish Catholics Together for Yes, and she was talking about the kind of discussions that people who regard themselves as Catholics are having around the Eighth Amendment. Obviously, they're Catholics who are going to vote yes or wish to vote yes. Someone says, I wish I'd heard this chat 2 weeks ago. I wonder why it was 2 weeks ago. Another text that says, there's a massive difference between contraception and ending the life of an unborn baby. Well, yes, let's accept that that's true. And I suppose that's the point of the discussions they've been having, that at what point would you do you regard, you say this is an unborn baby, or on the other end, is it just because the point she was making was that in church teaching for quite some time, before this thing called ensoulment took place, or it's otherwise known as the quickening, before it was regarded as the fetus was actually human, prior to that point, then you could argue it was just contraception because it wasn't actually a human being. Now, you may have in your mind a very straight, what you see as common sense point at which it is a human being. Not everybody sees it that way. I suppose that's the difficulty. Paul says, your guest needs to know one thing. Canon law is not the law of Ireland. It is the law of a private club which can have no bearing on state legislation, says Paul. That's true, Paul. That's pretty much the first thing she said. Katrina says, you absolutely cannot be a practicing Catholic and vote yes. One of the commandments is thou shalt not kill. Abortion goes against this commandment. You cannot pick and choose what parts of religion you want to follow. You either follow them all or else you cannot call yourself a practicing Catholic. And obviously, deep down, she knows this, or else she'd have given her real name. Well, now, in fairness to Elizabeth, she didn't give her real name. It was for none of the reasons you're assuming. Katrina, it was for a completely different set of reasons. She didn't want to give her real name, and I'll just leave it at that. But it's not the reasons you think you are. Having said that, Katrina, what percentage of Catholics actually follow all the strictures from the Catholic Church? Does every single Catholic not use artificial birth control? Does every single Catholic, have they not have sex before marriage or never had a vasectomy? I would say it's a tiny proportion in this day and age. You know, probably a lot of Catholics are a la carte to that degree. And there is, as Elizabeth was talking about, this convention within the Catholic faith that of your own conscience, your own informed conscience. So if you feel in good conscience that it's OK to do some of those things and still be a Catholic, well, then shouldn't you be allowed to be? And Katrina, is it up to you to judge whether they're proper Catholics or not? I would have thought that was God's job. Kay says, I'm Catholic and I've been very conflicted. This woman seems very informed and well read on the matter. More food for thought as Friday looms. Someone else is a bit more annoyed. Oh my God, get that woman off the air for God's sake. What a lot of ridiculous, self-indulgent and sanctimonious crap. It's nobody else's business what a woman decides to do with her own body. Listen to your own conscience by all means, but I don't need to listen to how you are dealing with yours. Grr. She says, well, I mean, if part of, and obviously I'm inferring from that you're a yes voter. I would have thought that most yes voters would be arguing that they want to live in a country that's tolerant for a wide range of points of view. Part of the yes argument is if we legalise abortion, that doesn't mean you have to have one if you're opposed to abortion. So by the same token, shouldn't you be more tolerant of this woman's point of view? She has a religious faith and she's in a group of people who have a religious faith and they're struggling with the issue, or at least they're talking about it and thinking about the issue. And isn't that what we're all supposed to do in this kind of a process? Jason says, my friends and I are part of the Catholic Student Society in UCD, and the woman speaking was being completely misleading. There is complete consensus in the Catholic Church that it is wrong to kill the innocent human life in the womb. She's entitled to her opinion, but it is not a Catholic opinion, says Jason. And, you know, in fairness, Jason is right. And I did put this to Elizabeth repeatedly, that the Catholic Church has always been opposed to abortion completely and absolutely at all points. It's been opposed to abortion. But then again, she was able to correctly point out that many theologians, and this is stretching back hundreds of years, have argued around the details of that as to, well, when could you say, for instance, ensoulment takes place, when it is it actually a human being? And she said that Elizabeth put it, the church decided probably the safest thing to do is just put a global ban on abortion, because we can't decide when life starts in the womb. Liam says, I hate my neighbour, so now I can't be Catholic. That's pretty much right, Liam. That's spot on. Anyway, someone you'd love to have as a neighbour is Graham Findlay. He's here once again for Tell Me Why. And if you've got a question for Graham, you can send it into afternoon@newstalk.com. On a bit of a theme from what we were just talking about, today's question is, why do saints have halos? Graham, good afternoon. Now, I assume we don't mean literally. We mean when they're depicted.
Well, yes, right. And of course, this is not the first time we've made the mistake of trying to do visual art on the radio. But bear with us, you know. No, I mean, sure. Well, one of the questions is whether saints literally had halo effects. Now, there's actually a psychological process called the halo effect, where you look at someone and they're attractive and you just assume all sorts of other good things about them, which is a bias in social science and in everything else, but quite a strong one. But in any case, so it may have been the case that saints shine in some particular kind of way. And this is really, really old. I mean, some of the oldest references to it we can find are in Homer, where Achilles and other heroes, you know, fire or light, and again, these are different things, shine from his head. But we think that the origins of this identification of holiness with halo or a shining light or flames, which appears in many, many religions, in the vast sort of soup of religion, which is Western/Asian religion, because they are all mixed up. We think it comes from one of our own favorite topics way back, at least Zoroastrianism.
Yeah.
But which itself is sort of the representation of an even older Indo-Iranian, Indo-Persian religion, which did have a focus on light on fire and all sorts of very positive associations with that. And
okay, would this mean some like early form of Hinduism then?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, there's a lot of discussions about where these images of saints, which are either glowing from their heads or entirely surrounded by fire, which sometimes has smoke and flame or shooting out rays or, you know, or a nice sort of subfusc light, there's a lot of focus on whether it's a mostly religious thing or also a sort of secular, or at least governmental thing, because of course, many of the, and how this was moved around all the great civilizations. I looked for African civilization to see if there's any role for halos in African religion, and I found this really tententious claim that the gold rings around some goddesses or spirits or masks or some actual women, right, their necks play the form of a halo in the West. But that sounds like you're really
stretching there. Yeah.
So unfortunately, I couldn't bring Africa in, but just about all the other religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Christianity, Roman religion, Greek religion have halos, and sometimes they're really big-ass halos. Like, and they've had for a long time, because in Zoroastrianism, which was the basis for the claims of the emperors of Persia to their divine emperorship, in Zoroastrianism, they were claiming descent from Ahura Mazda, or Majd, who is the principal figure of Zoroastrianism, and that was a sort of divine power.
Mm.
And so we find this swapping back and forth between religious figures and kings and emperors and back to religious figures and so forth. And it is unbelievably complex. I mean, I don't know how much time we have, but I mean, to start with the Zoroastrians.
You know exactly how much time we have.
I know exactly how much time we have. I mean, so, you know, to speed somewhat forward, right, a big figure in this is the basis of a separate cult, which is Mithra or Mitra, who was a figure in Zoroastrianism, but also had a cult of his own. Which was tremendously influential in as a rival to early Christianity. But we're not even close to being there yet.
Yeah.
So Alexander the Great is the key figure. Alexander the Great famously conquers just about everywhere, makes himself king of all these different places. So he's crowned pharaoh in Egypt, where they have a version of the halo, which is a picture of the sun between two ram's horns. Mm. In fact, in some religions, I believe in Mithraism, there'd also be a moon sort of crown to be crowned with, but he was just being crowned with the Egyptian version. He then goes off and conquers Persia and really sort of sets up the idea of himself and starts to live like a Persian emperor, much to his men's dismay, right? These tough Macedonian types, and increasingly thinks of himself as a divinity. But then he also goes off to conquer India, at which point his men just sort of revolt and it's enough, you know, with the conquering already. And he may have seen now, whether it's Zoroastrian influenced halos on images in India, or whether it's Indian images, which were the source of the Persian halos, it's complicated, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But anyway, he likes the halo.
Yeah.
Right? So he takes to wearing, and this is the other part of it. He takes to wearing crowns a lot. And that is principally the diadem. So you can have a crown with a lid, basically, and
yeah,
with pointy stuff on top. I'm miming this for those of you who are watching us online. Or the diadem, which is just a ringlet. And actually, quite recently, we found some, Alexander Times diadems. We think that a silver diadem, which was gilded, which was found in a tomb, which turns out not to be of Alexander's father, but his brother, may have been Alexander's actual crown,
cool,
which represents both the sun and power and divine energy, divine power, and secular rulership, right? And similarly, they just found under a bed in England a 2,300-year-old gold laurel wreath crown, which may have played a very similar role for the Greeks, and it's worth a fair bit. So Alexander brings a lot of this in. He dies. He has lots of successor kingdoms, and then lots of people who want to emulate him in terms of emperors of the West, right? Roman emperors. And so the successor kingdoms in Egypt and other places start to wear these really spiky sort of crowns. And that's partly because Mitra is also associated with the Greek god Helios, whose crown, which he was the basis of the Colossus of Rhodes, because he was the patron god of Rhodes. They built this big colossus, which fell into the sea, or fell down, actually, and was taken away on 900 camels. It was sold to a Jewish guy. Anyway, the Colossus of Rhodes had a big spiky crown because he's the sun god,
yeah,
right? You know, he drives the sun around in a chariot. That's the basis for the Statue of Liberty's crown as well. So it's with us to this day. So it swaps crowns and back. And if you think about Christian sort of theology, St. Paul is all very pro-crown. He's always talking about the crown of righteousness, or being crowned with, and it's sort of like the laurels, you know, it's being crowned as the victor of the race, right? You've achieved the victory. And this persists into, if you think about going down to the river to pray, they talk about who will wear the starry crown, right? You know, oh Lord, show me the way. So this is very, very powerful in people who spend a lot of time reading St. Paul. And it's very popular with Roman emperors, certainly of those of the first few centuries of the Common Era or AD, who are frequently depicted wearing these because they become increasingly interested in portraying themselves as Sol Invictus, which is the cult of the sun god, who is the Roman version of Helios. Are you still with me?
I'm still with you, yeah.
His feast day was, and his celebration was on December 25th.
Well, right? That's an astounding coincidence. Yeah.
Even though the early Christians really basically thought that Jesus was born in January, they found this convenient as a place to put the feast day. And that's where we start to look at Christian halos. And so Jesus, you know, the early Christians, like many Muslim groups, had a real taboo or certainly, inability. And some people say it's because they were poor and persecuted, so unable. And some said it because it's idolatry to be depicting Jesus.
Yes.
In any case, there are a few centuries where we have almost no representation. Well, you have no representations of Jesus. But when they start to have either a little more money and a little more toleration, they start to depict Jesus with a halo. And it's often the special halo for Jesus, which has sort of cruciform rays inside it, which is specifically reserved for Jesus. And there's actually, and this is really cool, there's a ceiling mosaic under St. Peter's, which goes back to something like the 300s, which depicts Jesus as basically Sol Invictus. He's riding a chariot with the cruciform halo. And this is one of the very earliest depictions of Jesus we have. And so it's not surprising that being Romans, you know, they took up Roman, iconography, Roman art. And sort of this is all well and good. They sort of diversify their halos. There's the Aureole and Mandorla, as I said, which is often almond-shaped or sort of the intersection of two circles, the intersection of heaven and earth, right? Which Jesus and Mary embody, right? Sometimes Jesus only acquires a halo after he's been recognized as the Son of God, after being baptized by John the Baptist. There are square halos if the person depicted is still alive. There's hexagonal halos, which are very rare for people who are allegorical figures or virtues or abstract concepts. And there's more and more. And sometimes these are flames and light. I mean, again, there's a real wide variety of halos. This is all well and good, right? And we might be familiar with them from mosaics and sort of other 2D representations of religious art until people start developing perspective.
Yeah.
In painting rather than a painting,
view of the world.
And
yes.
Also in statues, right? Yeah. So if you're making a statue and you've got to give the saint a halo, you've got to put the disc on there. And this is actually common to Buddhist statues as well. I mean, and there's a vast number of halos burning sort of aureoles in Islam, especially in non-Arab parts of Islam, Ottoman, Mughal.
Yeah.
The Mughals love their halos.
Now, because you mentioned Islam several times, I thought this is totally verboten to be putting up pictures of anyone. Now, so, I mean, maybe not of Muhammad, but in
Persia, again, right, they've always been a little more tolerant of the image, and there's these wonderful Persian miniatures. In fact, the Chester Beatty Library has an amazing collection of Islamic art. Where you see Muhammad, and sometimes you see his face, but then towards the end of the Persian miniature period, they tend to blank out Muhammad's face. But you see him, and his head is surrounded by flames, right? Or his whole body is surrounded by flames. And people like Jesus and Abraham will also have burning heads. And this is, they're beautiful, beautiful objects. And they were actually influenced, there's a whole nother bit on this, by Chinese artists who came with the Mongols when they conquered Persia. But art's complicated.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
But in any case, so you're right. There is this anti-representational quality to Islam. But when they would represent the Prophet Muhammad or other figures, there tends to be some form of halo, specifically, especially in Persia, where these traditions have lasted a long time. The problem of perspective, though, is quite grave as you move on in art history, in that you have to sort of give it a physical space. And sometimes it looks like they're just wearing plates.
Yes.
Like Masaccio or mortarboards or something like that. And then sometimes it's really subtle. If you look at Caravaggio's The Calling of Matthew, it's just sort of barely visible, sort of ring of gold above Jesus's head, which is partially obscured by shadow. And that can be quite subtle. Or they'll put a light source behind the head of someone, a saint or something like that. They're sort of trying to... They're working with the halo, and they're starting to think, I just don't know. Would it bump into stuff? I don't know. The artist is trying to make these decisions. However, with the Counter-Reformation, there was specifically the argument that there should be more halos in Catholic art, right? If it's one thing which distinguishes Catholics from Protestants, it's saints and venerating saints.
Yeah.
More, bigger, goldier halos.
Yeah.
And so it's political once again.
Graham, fascinating as ever. And there's loads more on this topic, actually. We keep going for another hour. Graham Findlay there. We're going to take a break after that. 7 different types of atheism.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.